Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me back. It's really an honor to be invited to preach at another church, and it's a double honor to be invited the second time. Bobby asked me to share a small message about evangelism. And I just want to say thank you so much for this testimony. I was just so blessed by them. And you know, me being a nurse, I'm always on the other side of that healthcare story. And it's always good to see kind of the other side of that and how people are just, what they're going through and how God is so good to us. So I wanted to start out with the message with a question. If you can turn to John chapter 4. What do you think about when you think about evangelism? Now for me, evangelism was something I avoided for a long time. Because for me, when I think about evangelism, I think about the words uncomfortable. I think about the word difficult. And I didn't grow up in a Christian family. So to me, evangelism was what like the Mormons did, what the GWs did. So it just seemed always like a cult-like thing to do, to proselytize. So it always had a negative connotation to me. And I actively avoided it even when I became a believer. And to be fair, most churches never taught you how to evangelize. It wasn't really a thing that I had to do at churches. So it was easy to avoid and not really think about. And it really wasn't until I came to Hillview and I learned the gospel online that changed. And I realized that, oh no, like sharing the gospel can be a good thing. It can be a very positive experience. It doesn't have to be awkward, uncomfortable, and difficult. It can actually be very natural. And I think that's what we see here in this passage in John chapter 4. The way Jesus is sharing with the woman at the well is so natural, it's conversational, and it's relational. And I think there's a lot in this passage that we can learn about evangelism from learning about how Jesus talks to her. So let's go ahead and read this passage, starting in verse 1. So then, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that he was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself was not baptizing, rather his disciples were, he left Judea and went away again to Galilee. And he had to pass through Samaria. So he came to a city of Samaria called Sychar, near the parcel of land that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there. So Jesus, tired from his journey, was just sitting by the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away to the city to buy food. So the Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, though you are a Jew, are asking me for a drink, though I'm a Samaritan woman? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Jesus replied to her, "If you needed the gift of God, and who it is who is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." She said to him, "Sir, you have no bucket, and the well is deep. Where then do you get this living water? You're not greater than our father Jacob, are you? Who gave us the well and drank of it himself, and his sons and his cattle?" Jesus answered and said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him shall never be thirsty. But the water that I will give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up to eternal life." This is the word of God. You know, I always think about this passage and think about how encouraging this passage is. But the more I study this passage, the more I think this passage is actually supposed to make us feel uncomfortable. You know, if you're a Jew reading this 2,000 years ago, you did not feel very comfortable reading this passage. Because what is Jesus really asking us here? By example. By example, he's asking us to interact and have conversations and to love people that you want to avoid. The very person, I mean, the history between the Jews and Samaria, I mean, that's a tough baggage, right? And it's really hard for us to put this in context in our modern day American culture. You know, we understand that Jews and Samaritans didn't get along with each other. You know, we get that point. But, you know, in America, we kind of love our neighbors. So it's hard for us to imagine having a nemesis. I mean, I love Mexican food. You know, we love the Mexican people. We kind of love Canadians. You know, because we kind of complain about how Canadians are too nice, and they always say "eh." But we just don't have that kind of same baggage the way Jews and Samaritans had. You know, I had a chance to go to Armenia recently, and man, Armenia and Turkey, talk about baggage. I mean, the history of genocide in the recent history, that has some cultural baggage. So when you say, hey, like, would you like to go to Turkey and talk to Turkish people, to Armenians, you're going to have some difficult reactions there. But we don't necessarily have it in America. You know, the closest I can come up with is maybe, this is San Leandro, so I think I can make this joke. But I avoid Oakland as much as possible. Like, if I could drive around Oakland, I will drive around Oakland, unless I really have to go through Oakland. And if you're from Oakland, I apologize, I'm sorry. But my insurance deductible is not that great, and my windows have been broken one too many times. And I try to travel around it if I can. So I can kind of get that point of, like, the Jewish people going around Samaria, because they really don't want to go through this town. But what does Jesus do? He goes right through it. He goes right through Samaria. So you have this two people group who hate each other so much that they avoid each other at all costs. So I think to the Jewish mind, this is unthinkable. How can a Jewish rabbi talk to a Samaritan woman? And you know that by the woman's reaction. She's shocked. I mean, you being a Jew, how can you ask me for a drink? And you know the disciples, when they come back, they didn't want to ask Jesus directly, but they're thinking, what are you doing? You're not supposed to talk to her? Like, why is Jesus talking to this lady? I mean, they're freaking out. And it's totally shocking to them. And I think this illustration is really hard for us to get. So you can kind of think about maybe like an elder or pastor trying to talk to a prostitute in downtown Oakland. Maybe that's the same level of shock that you might have reading this passage, but I don't know. I can imagine Bobby doing that. And I think you guys can too, in the most like best way possible. I think you can see Bobby evangelizing and talking to people like that. So maybe that wouldn't quite work here. So what's the modern day illustration for this Samaritan woman at the well? I think, for me at least, I think about Jesus talking to a transgender woman at Safeway at 2 a.m. And that makes me a little more uncomfortable. And I wonder if that is a little more of the context that I should feel when I read this passage, that, you know, this makes me feel a little uncomfortable, because I think Jesus is actually challenging me here and encouraging me here to talk to the very people I don't always feel comfortable with, and I actually want to avoid. So I think this passage should make us feel uncomfortable, because he's asking us to engage the very people we want to avoid. And we have plenty of that in the Bay Area, don't we? We live in an area where we are diametrically opposed to people's ideologies, and they are directly against our ideology or the biblical worldview. And I think it's so much easier to avoid that conversation and not engage. You know, I think it's increasingly more and more difficult for me in the workplace. It's increasingly more and more difficult, even when we do campus ministry on campuses, to have these conversations about sexuality, transgender, and biblical worldview in a loving way and also in a truthful way. And if I'm really honest with you, I would rather avoid that conversation. It is a lot easier for me to just avoid it, because, man, it is tough to hold that balance. But what does Jesus do? He walks right through Samaria. He doesn't shy away from the conversation. He doesn't just sugarcoat the truth either. He's firm, and he's willing to be truthful, and yet at the same time, he's loving. And I think if you do a Bible study on the way Jesus talks to women, all the interactions he has, there's so much gentleness there. And there's so much gentleness in the way he's talking to her, even though he's being truthful. You're right. You have had 5 husbands. But at the same time, you get that tone. And you see, it's so much easier for us to avoid all of that, but Jesus says we need to walk through it. So are we willing to walk across those boundaries? Are we willing to have those conversations? You know, who do you want to avoid? Is it someone at work that you don't like, that you try to walk around as much as possible so you don't have to meet them at the water cooler? Maybe even it's someone at church that you find is a little awkward and you'd rather not talk to them. Okay. Maybe it's someone that you dislike on campus, but maybe it's a conversation you're trying to avoid. But I think Jesus is calling us here to be loving and truthful in the best way possible. Let's go ahead and continue in verse 15. The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty, nor come all the way here to draw water." He said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." The woman answered and said to him, "I have no husband." And Jesus said to her, "You have correctly said, 'I have no husband,' for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. This which you have said is true." The woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worship on this mountain, and yet you Jews say that in Jerusalem is a place where one must worship." Jesus said to her, "Believe me, woman, that a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, because salvation is from the Jews. But a time is coming, and even now has arrived, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For such people, the Father seeks to be his worshipers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said to him, "I know that the Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When that one comes, he will declare all things to us." Jesus said to her, "I am he, the one speaking to you." And at this point, his disciples came, and they were amazed that he had been speaking with the woman. Yet no one said, "What are you seeking? Why are you speaking with her?" So the woman left her water pot and went into the city and said to the people, "Come see a man who told me all the things that I have done. This is not the Christ, is he?" They left the city and were coming to him. You know, reading this passage, I'm not sure if Jesus ever got that water. He starts the whole conversation asking for the water, and they start talking, and then she leaves the water pot behind, and I'm kind of wondering, did he ever get the water? But what I noticed here is that she left the water pot and went into the city to tell people about Jesus. It's like she forgot the whole purpose of why she was there. Yeah? She was there in the middle of the day, the hottest part of the day, to avoid people, to draw the water, because she was ashamed, ostracized by her community. So she's there in the heat of the day to draw water, but now she completely forgot why she was there to get water. And she leaves it behind. She runs towards the very people that she was trying to avoid. Isn't that amazing? What could have done that for her? How could she have left and forgotten that? You know, I think the modern day example of this, what if, I mean, I'm a night shift nurse, so I go shopping at like random hours sometimes. I go to Safeway 2 in the morning. But can you imagine being ashamed and not wanting to see people that you would go grocery shopping at 2 in the morning? So you go to Safeway 2 in the morning because you don't want to see anybody, and all of a sudden you have this conversation, and you leave your shopping cart behind, and you run towards back to people to tell people about Jesus. Can you imagine that? She forgot why she was there. Because I think she was filled. Her void was filled. The void in her heart was filled by the living water. And she has something better. And you know, I don't know about you, but I struggle with that even as a believer. Because I think we're supposed to be filled with the living water each and every day. Right? Give us this day our daily bread. Right? It's not just when we get saved, when we accept Christ, we're filled with the living water. We're supposed to go to him every single day. And there are so many things I struggle with where I struggle to fill that void with something else. But one easy thing that I can talk about that's something I still struggle with time to time when I'm really stressed, when I'm really depressed, is overeating. You know, I grew up as a very obese child. And I remember my mom, after the dentist or after the doctor's appointment, we would get McDonald's. So it was an easy way to kind of cope anytime there's pain or stress to overeat. And I feel like when I'm overeating, I'm trying to fill a void. And that void is definitely not my stomach, because I'm pretty full. But I'm still trying to fill it. And that's not trying to fill myself of the things of the Lord. I'm not going to the living water when I'm doing that, right? I'm trying to fill myself with the things of this world. And I think we all struggle with that, whether that would be relationship, the way this woman was struggling with, five husbands that have failed to fill that void, whether it be money, wealth, success, fame, all those things that we seek to fill that void in our heart. I think Jesus is calling us to fill that void with the relationship with him, that living water. And I think if we are filled with Jesus, with the living water each and every day, I think that's going to give us the courage to run towards the people that we want to avoid. Because I think that's what gave her the courage. Because she was filled with Christ, She was able to face her fear and run towards the very people that she was afraid of. So are we filled with the living water? And are we filling that void each and every day? Are we willing to leave the water pot behind? The things that we use as our coping mechanism in our day-to-day. You know, lastly, in this passage, I see love. You know, it doesn't directly say Jesus loved her, but it really doesn't have to, right? It's all over this passage. I mean, this was really a divine appointment. Jesus didn't just happen to be there and coincidentally meet this woman at the well. He didn't happen to know that she had five husbands because he, like, Facebook stalked her, right? He knew because he was God. And he knew, I think, that she was going to be there. I think he went to Samaria for her. I think he went through Samaria, unlike everyone else, to have the most unlikely conversation. A conversation between a Jewish rabbi and a Samaritan woman. And you can imagine her shame, the weight of her shame, how and her fear of community that ostracized her. The disciples wanted nothing to do with her. Maybe her five husbands rejected her. We don't know the whole story, but she was rejected by everyone else. And yet the Savior of the world comes through this town in Samaria and talks to the person that nobody wanted anything to do with because he loved her. And I think it's that love that we need when we are sharing the gospel. Right? Because I think sharing the gospel is really easy when we love someone. You know, I think loving is the hard part. It's easy to share with people you love. It's easy to want to share and be motivated to share with people you love. But those awkward conversations at work that we want to avoid because it doesn't make me feel comfortable, I think that's a very conversation Jesus is talking about here. But how do we go about doing that? How do we go about having that love and truth and balancing that out in our evangelism? I think we have to love the other people. And I think I find that to be the most challenging part about this passage. Is that, do I love these people? Or am I just avoiding them? Or am I willing to engage spiritually in conversations patiently with love for those others? Just as Jesus loved this woman. So I'm going to invite the worship team back up here for one more song, and I will come back up here and close in prayer.
Why don't we stand and sing Emmanuel's Land? Thank you. is not her garment, but her dear bridegroom's face. I will not gaze at glory, but on my King of grace. Not at the crown he giveth, but on his pierced hand. The Lamb is all the glory of Emmanuel's land. The Lamb is all the glory of Emmanuel's land.
Please be seated.
Let's close in prayer.
Thank you so much for your love. Thank you so much that you would love the people that we would want to avoid. Help us be filled with your love and to be filled with your living water each and every day so that we can effectively go out there and be overflowing with your love unto others. Because of that prayer.